Hello and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
Whoa, you're not?
No. Huh. But right. He is my favorite conservative.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. But you already know that.
Well, I got to every week I want to make sure I'm still in the running here.
Now, we normally start off with season three, March to the election. We normally start off with the polls. However, we are not live today because we're in Chicago now.
We are. Yes.
Is there something else you wanted to say?
No. Well, we're not actually in Chicago, no, but yes.
We will be.
We're sitting here, but
would
yes.
You please, I understand. Right, nice
that,
line
but,
here.
But it's right. That. But we wanted to make sure that we did have a show for all of our viewers and listeners. So. Been very supportive of our podcast. So we thank you so much for that.
Yes, we love hearing from you. So what are we going to talk about today, Edward?
Well, keeping our format of focusing on things that will be important this election season, we are going to look at what I like to call the censorship industrial complex.
Okay, let's get into it. Are we talking social media, print media, search engines, what?
A bit of all of them.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes. Because unfortunately, nowadays, you find censorship
everywhere.
Yes, everywhere.
We didn't plan to say that together, but it's just true. No. Okay.
Let's start. We're going to go back to 2016.
Okay.
Someone by the name of Donald John Trump won the presidency.
Yes, I remember. I think everybody remembers.
And Mark Zuckerberg was chastised from the left for not doing enough against Trump to keep him from getting elected.
Okay.
So in 2020, Mark Zuckerberg started shelling out Zuckerbucks to the tune of $400 million, which, you know, put drop boxes in highly Democratic cities and just everything they could to get Democrats to come out to vote. They spent that money on.
Would you explain to people, again, I wish I could remember the episode we talked about this, but what is the Dropbox? Like, what is a, what's
well, Dropboxes are for people that have ballots that they want to drop off. And normally, in normal times, they would be at election sites. So yes. Maybe it was after hours and you wanted to drop off your ballot or whatever, they'd have a box out front to do so, right? Just like the post office is closed, you can mail it in the post. You can go over to the post office and drop it off. Well, now they decided, let's put all these drop boxes around the cities, mostly in Democratic areas, heavy Democratic areas, because, you know, you got to remember.
Privately funded. Yes.
But also you got to remember it's COVID, right? We're still in the throes of COVID. So, you know, God forbid you stepped outside or anything like that. But they made it so that everybody was getting mail-in ballots. And the Democrats were smart enough to realize we got a gazillion mail-in ballots. Let's make sure we put these drop boxes in these heavily Democratic areas. We will get a much greater response than the other areas.
Okay.
Which they did.
Yes, they did. So Time Magazine, we have a link to this in the show notes. There's a 2020 election Time Magazine article titled "The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign That Saved the 2020 Election."
Now, hang on one second. I love that title. That saved the 2020 election.
Yes. So there's the bias.
It should have said saved for Biden or Democrats. Yes. The 2020 elections. Go ahead.
Sorry. So Time Magazine, they admitted and they laid out how leftist groups, business titans, we just talked about Zuckerberg, and social media companies conspired to, quote, save the election. I would replace that with win the election for the Democrats.
Correct.
Tell us what they said.
Yeah, in the article it says, quote, "There was a conspiracy unfolding behind the scenes, one that both curtailed the 2020 protests," so trying to tamp down all those crazy protests that we had, "and coordinated the resistance from CEOs, business CEOs. Both surprises were the result of an informal alliance between left-wing activists and business titans. They successfully pressured social media companies to take a harder line against disinformation and use data-driven strategies to fight viral smears." So what they consider, of course, you know, disinformation.
Yes.
Yeah, they were tamping down. Right.
And Zuckerberg was not the only one. So Facebook, of course, or Meta being his company, they were not the only ones. Google effectively shadow banned conservative outlets and continues to do so. And we think we're getting some shadow banning on Instagram. That's where we post our reels. And it feels like we're getting some more shadow banning.
Yeah.
Now that we are focusing so much on the election.
Yeah. I was listening to our good friend Glenn Beck last week, and he was getting 90 million views a month, and he's down to like 30 million views
on YouTube.
On all the social media outlets or whatever that they're, but you don't lose that many people when, you know, you don't, unless you have some sort of like massive, you know, bad press or something that happened to you, right? Even they found out he was a molester or something, right? Yes. No, it didn't.
And a good example of this is the Hunter Biden laptop story was completely banned from social media sites.
Yeah, I remember, I'm going to throw you under the bus a little bit here, but when
are you going to go back to our script?
Yeah, we would.
Okay. Throw me under the bus.
I reserve the right to go off script. But
I reserve the right to throw you under the bus.
Thank you.
Okay.
If you remember when this Hunter Biden laptop story broke and I brought it to your attention, you just kind of shrugged your shoulders. And I was telling you, this is one of the biggest stories of election interference you're ever going to see. And I got the eye roll from you.
Well, if you're gonna throw me under the bus, I gotta defend myself. Not because I didn't think there wasn't something on the laptop, or that I didn't think it was Hunter Biden's laptop. But yes, I didn't quite understand the connection between election interference. Like, I did miss that part.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. If you remember, So the Hunter Biden laptop was just a couple of weeks before the election. And a great example is NPR.
Yeah.
So the NPR's public editor on the laptop story said, here's the quote.
This is a quote.
"We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not real stories. And we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' times on stories that are just pure distractions."
That was October 22nd of 2020.
Yeah, right before the election. Everything on the Hunter Biden laptop has been proven true of collusion with China and Joe Biden knowing about it and everything else that might have been important to know on who you're going to vote for. In fact, there was a survey done about a year later that said, if you would have known about the Hunter Biden laptop, and I believe it was like 13 or 14% of the people would have changed their votes. Think about that.
Wow.
That's a huge number. And Donald Trump would still be president.
The New York Post, it's the oldest newspaper in America.
Yeah, the oldest running newspaper in America.
Was suspended from Twitter.
Well, they're the ones that broke the story.
I was getting to that. Okay. You interrupted me. Please don't do that.
Please continue.
Thank you. God damn, man. All right. So take two. The New York Post, the oldest newspaper in America, was suspended from Twitter for breaking the story about the Hunter Biden laptop.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And anybody who tried to repost anything that the New York Post said about this before they took them down, they were also banned too.
Oh, yeah. So many people.
Yeah.
Which brings us to Elon buys Twitter. Let's talk about that, which we think is a good thing, by the way.
Yes. I mean, when Elon Musk, what did he pay, $45 billion for it or something like that?
Yep.
You know, when he bought Twitter, the meltdown on the left was just like popcorn time, right? Get your popcorn ready and just watch the heads explode.
Yeah. And I because I do work in healthcare, I was shocked by the sheer amount of people who boycotted Twitter when this happened. And because here's the bottom line, doctors are on Twitter. Doctors didn't leave Twitter. I don't know any doctors who left Twitter, by the way. They might be posting a little less, but for the most part, they're still there. And if you're in healthcare and you're trying to reach doctors, maybe you're not. But if you are, then you need to be where your audience is. And I was shocked by how many groups left Twitter that are in healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Elon Musk, he gets into Twitter.
Yeah, he sees the back end.
Yeah, so he sees what's going on. And so he dumped all this data that was out there, and it showed how the shadow banning was done at Twitter and to whom it was done, and how when he actually released that, and he had two journalists go through this to get it out to the public, two trusted people, one Matt Taibbi, who is an absolute leftist journalist originally from the Rolling Stone, and Barry Weiss, who was the former editor, chief editor at the New York Times.
Yep.
And so those two went and put it out, and the coverage from the mainstream media was zero. I mean, they banned it off any topics that they had for their evening news for the entire week that it came out. Yeah.
Yeah. So Musk said, this is a quote, there is a bias of omission, which is arguably worse than overt bias because the public is never told of information that may concern them or be of interest to them.
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah. That's a great statement because if you're not even seeing what you might possibly be interested in because certain people don't want you to see it, you know, let you make up your mind, which is the whole thing. What now X is all about. Amen to that. Yeah.
So, and you want to read this next part?
You know, yeah, I just challenge to people that are saying, oh no, Google or whatever, they won't shadow ban, whatever. But just type into your search engine on Google any controversial subject, whether it's abortion, whatever, it doesn't matter, and start scrolling down and see how far down you have to go to get a conservative or an opinion from the right on it. It's, you know, they used to have pages. Now it's just a running scroll. It used to be, you know, 6 or 7 pages in.
That's true. You're right. Now it's just a running scroll.
Right. And now what, you know, what was it? I forget what the stats are. You probably know of if it's not on the first page. The chances of you finding it were
like something like 85 to 90% won't go past the
people
first page.
Just look at the first page. That's it. Yeah. Right. I'm done.
I will challenge you. I will add this. If you know how to use incognito mode, because if you do a Google search that Edward just suggested, Google's going to show you what Google thinks you want to see based on your search history, even if you erase it, people. I know this, I do it because I erase my history all the time, but got to hide stuff from Edward, but kidding. So do an incognito mode search because in theory, that's supposed to give you pure results. But to Edward's point, you're still not going to see a lot from the conservative.
Yeah, well, let me push back a little bit on that because, you know, on my laptop, it's mostly conservative sites, unless I'm doing research for the show. And then I go into a lot more left-wing sites. But, you know, probably 90% of my stuff is more on the conservative side. But yet, if I still Google something, I'm going to get NPR, ABC, News, NBC.
I'm just saying to do a pure test, they should do an incognito mode. That's
all.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about streaming services.
You know, they're becoming so popular, right?
Yes, Disney owns Hulu and Google owns YouTube TV, and both of them, and I think Hulu's done a better job so far, but they're both trying to compete with Netflix and Amazon and all the other streamers out there.
But not CNN Plus. Remember that? That imploded within 30 days.
Yes, right? It did.
Anyway, yeah, but what's interesting is of those two, of like Hulu and YouTube TV, the only right of center channel that you could find on either one of those is Fox News. That's it. Everything else is nothing comes close to being conservative whatsoever.
Yeah. I were you going to add this other part?
No, that's fine.
Okay. All right. No. I'm the play-by-play. I'm looking at he is very ad-libbing. I will say this about that. Isn't that what you like to say?
Ergo, here you go.
Yes. Oh, good God. you're distracting me. I was going to say, I do recommend, I completely forgot my thought and now I'm super mad at you. Oh, okay. Two thoughts. One, I do recommend the Epoch Times. Highly recommend. For $1 a month, you can get a subscription and you will not only get access to more articles, but you will get access to documentaries. And they are the largest Chinese media company in the U.S. They are?
I did not know.
Yeah. And they're fantastic.
Is that E-P-O-C-H?
Yes. Okay. E-P-O-C-H Times. We'll put a link in the show notes. But there's a lot of free stuff. But if you want to dive deep, there's some really, really good. And it's not all just political. There's healthcare. There's all kinds of stuff. But highly recommend. The other caveat I want to add to this about what you said is what I found very interesting the few times I've been in Europe, always for work. If you turn on the news there through these hotels, right, various hotel chains, you're not going to find anything that would be considered even remotely right, except sometimes Bloomberg News. That's it.
That ain't right.
I know, but that's like the closest thing that might be considered conservative.
At least
there.
Financial anyway.
Yes. And it's so shocking. Yeah. I mean, I would understand why if Europeans did not know sort of the other side of things because they don't see it.
Yeah. They believe that there's bands of white supremacists running around the streets armed with AR-15s gunning down black men.
Yes. Right. Yes. Because that's what the narrative
that's what they're getting. Right. Yeah.
And this is, I'm so glad you put this in the show. So I don't know. I was glad Edward put this in. Remember Parler? So Parler was pre-Elon, an alternative to Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Do you know why they called it Parler?
No, I don't.
Parler is the French word for speak.
Oh, parlez-vous français? Oh, okay. See? All right. So it was one of those, the left was saying, if you people on the right think you're being censored, then start your own Twitter. So this guy did. He started Parler and it took off. It really did.
Yes. The left became very concerned. Yeah. Yes. It was always like you just said, it's like, well, yeah, you think you're getting censored. Well, why don't you go just set up your own stuff? And Parler went, okay.
And let's talk about what happened.
Well, unfortunately.
This is pre-Elon.
So. Yes, pre-Elon. That Apple and Google removed Parler from their stores. So you couldn't download
the app
anymore. While Amazon actually removed the site from its web hosting services. So that's one thing. And I'll jump forward here. I don't think we have it in here, but True Social.
Yes.
So what Trump set up his own web hosting service because he would have been a no-brainer for them to cancel him.
Right? Well, I think that's what most people don't realize. AWS, Amazon Web Services, is the moneymaker for Amazon. I mean, they were really smart and had a long-term plan. And if you think Amazon makes money off retail, you're out of your mind. They don't make money. They lose money in retail. But so many websites on the back end are hosted by Amazon Web Services.
Yeah.
And Parler didn't even have a website anymore.
Yeah. So it was, go ahead and set up your own. Oh, by the way, since you've spent all this money setting it up, we're canceling.
Yeah. And this is what they said. This is why, this is what Apple, Google, and Amazon said, that Parler lacked key content moderation systems, including ways for users to report objectionable content and the ability to remove users who violated the app's terms of service. Now, didn't the app make up their own terms of service? I mean,
of course.
Yeah, geez. Yeah. All right. Continue, because this is good
stuff. Well, they accused Parler of being a platform to plan the January 6th attacks. Ooh, that's always January 6th. It's like a Pavlovian response from the left. Oh, right. They start barking. So let's compare the January 6th attacks with the 2020 riots, right? I mean,
one was okay, and one was not.
Well, what I'm talking about, they accused them of trying to plan the attacks on Parler. In terms of
they accused Parlor of planning the attacks.
Right. But people planning the attacks using Parler to communicate and things like that. The 2020 riots, when they were going on around these cities around the country, there would be, before the riots would happen, there would be like a pallet of bricks delivered to certain sites that people would amazingly find and throw at police. So talk about things being, planned.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, come on.
They also accused Parler of hate speech, which is speech the left does not like.
Yes. Yeah.
And when Edward was talking about this story, I was like, oh my God, Parler. So tell us today what happened with Parler, or where are they today?
Yeah, they were actually purchased and they did lay off a bunch of things, kind of reformatted it, and they're supposedly going to relaunch sometime this year.
And I guess they're going to have to create their own background, their own back server.
It is. I wonder, is it similar to Truth Social though? I mean, is it kind of just a retread of that?
I don't know. I don't know. I think Truth Social, the problem with that is because it was founded by Trump, it's so, it's leaning the other direction, it's so
controversial.
Right.
Yes.
But is there still room for Parler? Is that what you're asking?
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there's room for everything. You just got to be better than the other guy.
Oh, okay. How very capitalistic of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So this week in wins, and you may have heard this already, but we purposely saved it for this episode because even though we're recording this in May, this is going to debut in June. This is from our friend Jesse Mendoza at this Sarasota Herald Tribune. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it is.
Headline.
A fellow Floridian here.
Yes. Longtime Floridian.
Longtime Floridian.
DeSantis. Florida bridges to glow red, white, and blue, not rainbow, during Pride Month.
Woo!
What?
Yeah, that's a win, baby. So bridges across Florida, including the Sunshine Skyway and Ringling Causeway, which Edward can tell you where those are. I have no idea. Will not gleam in rainbow colors in this June in celebration of LGBTQ Pride Month at the behest of Governor DeSantis.
Yeah. No. So the headline is misleading. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, give me the headline again. So it says not during Pride Month. Now that's insinuating that he's only doing this to screw over the Pride Month, right? However, from the article, plans are in place to adorn Florida bridges in red, white, and blue between May 27th and September 2nd.
And May 27th being Memorial Day
right.
to Labor Day.
Yes. Well, not Labor. Labor's at the end, isn't it? Or no, no, you're right. September 2nd is Labor Day. Yeah. So all summer.
All
not
summer.
Just June, okay?
You're right. That is
disingenuous.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
A little deceptive.
Yeah, okay, I mean, for me, just stop with all the political causes of that we have to do colors and this and that. And I understand, but don't get the government involved in this stuff. They, you know, red, white, and blue, be patriotic for your country. Great.
He's calling it the 2024 Florida Freedom Summer Effort. And when I did hear about this part of it, it includes free visits to state parks on Memorial Day weekend and the lifting of sales tax on recreational items in July.
Okay.
So I thought that was really smart of him.
Sweet. Yeah, absolutely. You know, dealing with the whole Pride Month, why does a group get an entire month when we have a day for our presidents? A day for our veterans,
yeah.
A day for people who have died in service of their country, a day for our independence. We should have an independence month. I mean, if we're going to have a month, for crying out loud. So just stop with the nonsense.
Okay.
End of rant.
Thank you.
Done.
All right. So we don't always have this segment, but when we have it. And we feel like this was pretty evergreen. Again, you may have heard it by now, but this week and what the fuck or WTF. Thank you, Apple, for slapping us with those explicit labels. This is from our friend Rachel Looker at BBC News. Give us the headline, Edward.
Headline, New York governor slammed for saying black children don't know what computers are.
Oh, I love this. I love this one for the humor. So New York Governor Kathy Hochul is facing backlash, shocking, for saying that black children in the Bronx don't know the word computer. Are you kidding me? Oh my God. And this is what she said. Right now, we have young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know these things.
Well, who represents the Bronx? Oh, wait, that's AOC.
You condescending bitch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, no, I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. But yes, you made the comments while she was speaking to a technology panel in Beverly Hills. Okay.
Yeah.
But what I thought was fascinating is I was researching the story because I wanted to bring it up because this thing got shelved very quickly.
Yes,
out
it did.
There.
It went away pretty fast.
Yeah. And I wanted to make sure, you know what, she needs to be, you know, excoriated for this. But how NBC reported it when I was first looking at stories is, you know, she regrets making an offhand remark and it was an extemporaneous comment. Just like that's supposed to forgive her because it was just off the top of her head. So basically off the top of her head is I'm a racist, right?
Yeah.
You know, oops, it got out there. But to me, compare that with Trump when he makes an offhanded remark. Because, you know, in his speeches, he goes off script, right?
Yeah,
you know, probably the best one that blew the minds of every leftist was in the 2016 campaign. When he was giving a speech and he said, you know, talking about Hillary's emails, he said, hey, Russia, maybe you should find Hillary's emails and release them.
And he was joking.
Everybody laughed.
He was joking.
And the left meltdown on that still continues today, that was a sign that that Trump was sending out to Russia to.
That was a message.
It's a wink and a nod. Okay, you're clear now to go get her emails. I mean, good Lord. So, but yeah, how they compare Republicans to Democrats, but still, Kathy Hochul, you should be ashamed.
Yes. But you're right. They buried it pretty quickly.
Oh,
so that's why we're bringing it back to you, people. All right. And we always like to finish with something fun. Our segment, This Week in Woke. This is from our friend Amy Quinton at UC Davis. We'll make sure we always put links in the show notes for these. This is hilarious. Would you please read the headline, Edward?
lab-grown meat's carbon footprint potentially worse than retail beef. This could almost be in a WTF, right?
Yeah, it is. Instead of this, all right. But. So lab-grown meat, which is cultured from animal cells, is often thought to be more environmentally friendly than beef because it's predicted to need less land, water, or greenhouse gases than raising cattle. So, yeah, on its surface, it could
you,
be.
You would think.
You would think, but.
Correct, yes. But researchers at UC Davis have found that lab-grown or cultivated meat's environmental impact is likely to be orders of magnitude higher than retail beef based on current and near-term production methods.
The study found that the global warming potential of lab-based meat using these purified media, is 4 to 25 times greater than the average for retail beef.
4 to 25 times higher.
What do they mean by purified media?
Well, I think it's the actual process of
Maybe they matter.
Or meat. Right?
Oh, okay. Probably all right. Meat. Yes. Okay. Again, we will put a link in the show notes. So this lab-grown meat, is that going to taste good? But 4 to 5 times greater.
Do you remember years ago when this carbon footprint garbage started and they started complaining about cow farts?
Right? Oh, God. Yes.
And everybody laughed like, you can't be serious. Good Lord.
No, people were serious.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But to me, this is kind of equivalent with electric vehicles, electric cars, because electric cars, shockingly, it turns out, are way worse for the environment because of all the minerals that are needed.
What it takes to be made, the battery. Yeah.
They are also, I think, 4 times heavier than an average gas-powered car, which causes way more road damage, which the tires wear out, which emit, things into the atmosphere. And it's one of those things that, geez, sounds like a great idea until you might want to actually look at the details of it.
Well, we know on my list of priorities, the environment is pretty low for me. It always has been.
On every poll that's out there, the whole climate change is, especially in today's world where people are worried about, keeping a roof over their heads and eating and feeding their children, things like that. It's way, way down on the list. So, yeah. Well, thank you, though. We appreciate that from UC Davis for them actually, because that is not a conservative institution. And for them to put that out, mucho kudos. Mucho kudos. I said it.
Mucho kudos. Okay. So I just realized that the week after this, we will probably have to air a repeat. We are going to be out of town.
Oh, yes, maybe.
We are.
Or we could do the show. I think we're visiting her parents.
Yes.
Who are way left. Maybe we could do the show from their house. They'd love it.
I don't know if that's a good idea. We might do an audio only.
Yeah.
It'd be easier to do audio only. Okay. Actually, good. So we will let you know, no matter what, we'll always have a show for you. But please, thank you so much for joining us and follow us on social media. We are live most Sundays. We'll always let you know if you follow us on social media when we're live. But we're live most Sundays, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. If you're listening to the podcast, which always drops on Monday, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast available wherever you're listening right now. Those reviews, especially on Apple and Podchaser, go a long way and help other people find our podcast. And we want to keep doing this for you guys, but we need those reviews. So we are working on the locals community. Perhaps we will take that weekend with my parents to do a deeper dive because we're going to need some time away from them, perhaps.
Possibly.
Yes. But you can find us. You can contact us directly at myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Bye.